Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the quarterly EN call. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, press star followed by the number one on your telephone. If you need to reach an operator at any time, press star zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, February 16th, 2017. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Robert Taft. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to our quarterly all-EN call. This is our first call for 2017, so it is great to have you join us, and we're appreciative of you taking your time to participate in the call. A couple things that I want to go ahead and open up with in terms of organization and agency leadership. To begin this call, as you're aware, obviously with the election and the change, other changes going through government, SSA is currently awaiting a nominee for the Commissioner of Social Security. During this transition phase, the previous acting Commissioner, Carolyn Colvin, resigned at the end of January. Taking her place as the new acting commissioner is Nancy Berryhill. Nancy was the previous deputy commissioner for operations and has spent much of her career, as a matter of fact, I believe all of her career has been at Social Security, rising up through the ranks, including stints as regional commissioner in Chicago and Denver. So she brings a tremendous wealth of expertise and knowledge into this job on an acting basis. Once we receive any additional information, we will forward that along to you. Additionally, what I need to report to you is that our deputy commissioner, previous deputy commissioner for the Office of Retirement and Disability Programs, Virginia Reno, resigned her position at the end of January as well. Currently, Mariana LaCanfora is serving as the acting deputy commissioner in that role, and there is no replacement for the assistant deputy commissioner position that Mariana previously inhabited. So that is the temporary structure that we are operating within right now. The good news about, in terms of Mariana's acting position, obviously she brings a tremendous amount of knowledge and familiarity of all things related to the retirement disability program into her position, and she's also very, very familiar with the Ticket to Work program. So there's continuity there as we move forward, and again, if anything changes in that regard, we will keep you up to speed on that. The second thing I'd like to talk briefly about is obviously I'd like to welcome our new employment networks that have joined the Ticket to Work program over the last quarter between our last call and today's call. Hopefully all of them are listening in today on the call. We welcome you. I'm not going to mention each organization by name, but we had quite a few new members joined the Ticket to Work program, and we appreciate you coming online as employment networks and providing services to our beneficiaries. So one other thing I want to transition into as well is some good news. The COLA notices that we edited last year, we worked with another component within the Office of Retirement Disability Programs. They control the notices and the all-important COLA notice that every American gets concerning the increases to their benefits, the annual increases. And we had worked with them in conjunction of changing the information contained in the notice concerning the Ticket to Work program. We emphasized the changes that we made. We emphasized the Ticket to Work call center number and the Choose Work website. And I'm happy to report that beginning in December, And into January, the reports we received back from Maximus were essentially a substantial increase in the number of calls received by the call center, a dramatic uptick. So you should have noticed an increase in the number of calls coming into your organization. And so we wanted to let you know that the big reason for that likely was the COLA notices that started going out at the beginning of December and the uptick in the number of calls we were getting into the call center, Ticket to Work call center in December and January. So we noticed quite a bit of uptick there, and that's good news, and we look forward to that moving forward. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and turn it over to Felix to talk a little bit about some additional ticket program performance data. Felix?
Thank you very much, Rob. Hi, everybody. This is Felix Stump, the director at the ticket program manager, the contractor supporting the Ticket to Work program. And I've got some, I think, exciting information, at least in terms of the overall scope of the program. Last quarter, on the last quarter's call, if you have joined us for that one, you probably heard Rob share some data at the close of the fiscal year of 2016, which would have ended at the end of September 2016. What we have today are some information for the calendar year of 2016 compared to that same time period in 2015. And so if you're following along on the webinar, you don't need to write this number down. You've got it all right in front of you. Just a few points. The number of ENs that we had at the close of 2015 is roughly the same as the number of employment networks we had at the close of 2016. We're actually down a little bit. So we have four fewer. We have a total of 609 organizations in the program, and we ended 2015 with 613. So we've kind of had the same number of employment networks, but we see an increase in activity everywhere else. So we've got the same number of organizations, but more of you all are engaging with beneficiaries and assigning those tickets, and you're finding more success overall. So the number of beneficiaries assigned to employment networks has gone up by about 7,500. So we've got just in the 2016, we assigned – you all, I should say, assigned 50,260 beneficiaries, an increase of 14.2%. The number of those beneficiaries that are generating payments for their ENs has also gone up even more. So that has increased to 55,652, which is an increase of over 27%, almost 28%. So looking at just those two numbers, you've got the same number of ENs serving more beneficiaries, and even a higher proportion of those beneficiaries are generating payment. And so we've got more activity and more success. On the fourth line there, we see the number of beneficiaries for whom cash benefits were not paid. So that's the number of beneficiaries that are actually at least 1 month of the year went into outcome payment status. So they reached zero cash. That number also went up by about 4,500, up to just under 19,000 beneficiaries, an increase of 31%. And then finally at the bottom there, you see the overall dollar amount of payments to employment networks went up as well by $16.7 million for a total in 2016 of $77.8 million, an increase of over 27%. To me, I think to us at the leadership level of the program, this all looks pretty good. We've got the same number of employment networks, but you all are doing more work with more beneficiaries, and those beneficiaries are seeing greater levels of success, and you as ENs are receiving greater levels of reward for the success of your clients. So thank you very much, and with that, I will turn it back over to right over to Shireen Knox with Operation for Job Ready Veterans.
Actually, Felix, this is where let me jump in and give Shireen a bit of an introduction. Shireen is the ticket is a ticket program manager for the an ENCOG Job Ready Veterans in Indianapolis, Indiana, and she has over 25 years of experience in developing and managing employment services for people with disabilities. Currently, she works for a traditional EN that specializes in working with veterans with disabilities, in addition to their spouses and caregivers. In addition, she trains and facilitates workforce ENs and other traditional ENs. She is a board member of NINA, and she is a secretary and has presented at several state and national conferences. And before I turn it over to Shireen, she is going to speak after her presentation. We'll open it up for about 5 minutes for questions, and if there's time remaining, we'll open it up again after everyone has presented and spoken. If we don't have time to get to all of your questions on Shireen's presentation, which all of you should see, I believe there is her email address, and you can contact her there if you have additional questions. So, Shireen, take it away.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for asking me to speak about a topic that's close to my heart, and that's working with veterans in the Ticket to Work program. And what I'm going to talk to you about is, you know, who are they, where are they? Many of you may not understand what service-connected disability is or what non-service-connected pension is and how that relates to Social Security disability, but also what are veterans looking for as far as careers and the best place to find them, and then lastly, how can we best help them? So on the next slide, you'll see that we're looking at getting first to know the veteran population. As of 2015, there are approximately 21,681,000 veterans. That's a lot more staggering number than I think most people realize. And also, since October of 2001, we've had 1.64 million troops deployed. So that tells you that we've got a lot of servicemen and women that are out there that are overseas serving our country for our freedoms. Also, on the next slide, it says that one in every 12 adults is a veteran. To me, that's a really high, and if you think about everybody that you meet day to day, then you don't realize that there's that many, one out of 12. Could you go to the next slide, please? And also, the top three states with the highest number of veterans, I really had no idea, but I'll tell you, it's California, it's Texas, and it's Florida. So on the next slide, please, let's talk a little bit about the returning deployed troops. We're talking about that 1.64 million that's been deployed since 2001. Upon the return, we had 11.2% returning with post-traumatic stress disorder or depression, just over 12% with traumatic brain injury, and 7.3% with PTSD, depression, or depression and post-traumatic stress disorder. If you add those together, that's 500,000 troops that are returning with these invisible wounds. So these, I'm not counting the physical wounds, these are just the invisible wounds that they're returning with. And sadly, about 22 veterans take their lives every day, and that's about one in every 65 minutes. So they say that it's combat stress that does that, the post-traumatic stress disorder, reliving events that happened. And so just trying to understand that and understanding things that they've gone through and things that they've seen that we've never seen, you don't really have to discuss those things with them, but just know and understand what they've been through. So on the next slide, it says that are veterans with invisible wounds most likely or least likely to get the help they need? The answer is no. And a lot of people are like, well, why? Well, the main reason that's given is because they don't like asking for help because they are afraid their coworkers will no longer trust their ability. Which, in the civilian world may seem a little different. However, this has been instilled with them in the military, that you are a team member and you do everything for the success of the team, and they've got your back and you've got their back. And they very much carry that into the work world with them, into the civilian life as well. So if they have post-traumatic stress disorder, should you ask what prompts it? Most definitely have a very candid conversation with them. Sometimes they know, sometimes they don't know. One example is the July 4th syndrome. Many people are not aware of that July 4th with the sound of firecrackers going off, that will prompt a lot of veterans post-traumatic stress disorder because it sounds like gunfire. So they love the July 4th, but for kids that are out there a couple days earlier or a couple days afterwards who are just setting off firecrackers, that can sometimes create their post-traumatic stress disorder and cause some of the symptoms for that. On the next slide, I want to talk a little bit about what service-connected disability is. Service-connected disability, that's a veteran, their injury or illness occurred in or aggravated by the military service. Now, this is non-tax dollars that they can receive for service-connected disability, but in order to receive any cash benefits, they have to have at least a 10% service-connected disability rating. Now, on the right, you'll see that the ratings, they've got different ranges on the right side, all the way up to 100%. Now, the good news is that when they go through the Ticket to Work program or they return to work, their earnings will have no effect on their cash benefits from the service-connected disability from the VA. So that is something that will never go away for them unless they go and they have a medical review through the VA and they decide to lower the rating or increase the rating. Now, a zero rating is better than no rating, and I want to bring that up because it causes a baseline. They actually have documentation and a baseline, which was established, because it could worsen as a veteran get older. So a veteran could be very young in the service and get out and have injury to the knee. And as they get older, our knees tend to wear out. Well, that could increase their service-connected disability because they received the initial knee injury while they were in service. So the ratings could go up higher for the knee injury. And so that's why they'd rather establish a 0% rating than no rating at all, just to identify that there's a potential issue there that could worsen as they get older. On the next slide, how does service-connected disability compare to Social Security? There's different criteria to be eligible. Social Security sets their own criteria for Social Security disability. The VA has their own for service-connected disability. Receiving one does not influence receiving the other. So there's no comparison. There's just one does not influence whether you can receive the other. And usually, what I have found and what I have read is that a veteran with a 70% service-connected disability rating or higher will usually qualify for Social Security disability, but the veterans don't know this. Or that they do know it, they don't necessarily want it because it's very hard for veterans to ask for help. They're used to be very independent, being part of a team, being part of a mission, being part of a solution. And asking for help is not a natural or comfortable feeling for a lot of veterans. So how many veterans are rated with at least a 70% service-connected disability? You might be surprised. This is physical and invisible wounds, and there's an estimate of 1,139,000 veterans out there with at least a 70% service-connected disability, which means that there is that many who could qualify for the Ticket to Work program. So there's a lot of veterans out there. We just have to get the information out there so that they understand what the Ticket to Work program is about. On the next slide, I decided to add what the VA's general service-connected disability compensation looks like. I'm working with one veteran right now, and he has a spouse, and he's at 100% service-connected disability. So he automatically gets, if you look at the chart, $3,078.11 a month. Now, he has heart issues, but we've also assigned his ticket because he has two master's degrees, and he can work. So he can still receive his 100% service-connected disability through the VA. He's also receiving Social Security disability. And so, you know, he has some money already to help support himself and his spouse. The next slide, I want to talk a little bit about non-service-connected pension. When you speak with a veteran, they will know whether they are on a service-connected disability or a non-service-connected pension, or it may be called non-service-connected disability. Now, the Veterans Impact Pension is technically what it's called, and it's a needs-based benefit. It's very similar to SSI, and it's paid to wartime veterans that have to meet the age criteria or the non-service-connected disability requirements. So for the non-service-connected pension, that's for someone that did not get injured or have a condition that was aggravated while in the service, but later, and they don't have a lot of income that's coming in, then they're receiving the non-service connected pension. And I'm working with one gentleman right now who has that. They have different countable income. Their income for that, it's from the veteran and the dependent resources in the household. And it's earnings and it's disability payments along with the others that are listed here. So he was able to tell me how much that he could return to work for and what would happen to his non-service connected pension, which for him in this situation was all or nothing because of the amount that he was receiving was below $1,000. So again, you know, just to understand that there are two different areas upon which a veteran can be receiving money, and one is not disturbed by receiving disability payments or by wages. This one, non-service connected pension, they do count income for earnings and disability payments as well, so that will affect them. On the next slide, let's talk about what veterans are looking for in civilian employment. Typically, you've got someone that, you know, do you want money or is what's the mission is important to you? For many veterans, it's the mission of the company. They want to do something that's for the good. It's not necessarily the money. We all have to live, but also if they are receiving a service-connected disability amount, let's say the $3,000 a month, then they can afford to say, okay, it's not necessarily about the money, but I want to do something that this company is doing good, giving back, and that I feel that I'm a part of. And then there below is success of an individual or a team. There, it's instilled in the military to work as a team, to do things together. So it's not that they can't take initiative. They've all learned to do that. But they really very much like to succeed in a team environment. And then you've got advancement versus a flat organization. Veterans very much want to work for a company where there is advancement. In the military, they have certain ranks, and there's certain things that you need to do in order to reach the next rank, which then comes hopefully with more money. If they're in an organization that's really flat and there's not a lot of advancement possibilities, that's usually not very much interest to them. But also with the advancement possibilities, they like to know, what do I need to do in order to get an advancement? Because, again, that was instilled in them in the military. You do these things, and then you can increase in your rank. So the best places to find a veteran, veteran job fairs. There's also stand-downs. I don't know if you're aware of what a stand-down is, but it's like a fair for homeless veterans or veterans that need to seek out services. And you can go to va.gov, and you can see all of the stand-downs that are available at what dates and in the, where the locations are. In 2016 in Indiana alone, we had 11 stand-downs throughout the state of Indiana, and my organization was able to attend 8 of those and to connect with a lot of individuals who were looking for help for being homeless or at risk of being homeless and to come and to get to know our organization and what help that can be out there. So also going to find where veterans will come to seek out your resources. You can also partner with the other companies that are there at the stand down and talk with them and how do they do outreach to veterans and can there be some internal referral processes that's going on. With the stand downs, you know, I mentioned the homeless population. About 12% of the entire homeless population are veterans, which I think is very high. So going to these stand downs, getting your information out there, not just about ticket to work, but learning what else is out there for them, you know, is very helpful to them. So the next slide is how can we help? Well, when you're talking with them, knowing that they like to work as a team, speak to them in terms of working as a team or as in action plans. They like that in when you're saying, okay, this is the next step that we need to do together. And this is what you need to do, and this is what I need to do. Now, it's very important that you follow through and do what you say that you're going to do. That's important to them because it's very easy to lose the trust of a veteran in saying and doing what you say you're going to do. It's that whole under-promise and over-deliver thing. Need to discuss the importance of careers with meaning and advancement opportunities with them. There's also a military translator. In my company, we have a 5-day Veterans Employment Transition Seminar. And during that time, they'll come in on Monday and we ask them, you know, what did they do in the service? And myself, I've never been in the service, and so it sounds like a foreign language, but everyone else that's sitting in there is understanding what they're saying when they're talking about their rank and logistics and other things. Well, by Friday, I'm able to understand what they're saying in terms of what their skills are and what their career goals are, because we're teaching them what we call civilian ease. Because many of our veterans are going to human resource managers, and they're speaking in these terms that the military people understand, but human resources may not. So there's a military translator. Actually, there's three or four that is on the Internet. You can Google search that. And what you do is you can put in their rank or their military code, and what the military translator will do is it will pop up skills in terms that we civilians understand. It will also say they've learned these skills that they could transfer to these jobs. Many of our veterans don't know what kinds of jobs out there that they qualify for. So this is very valuable to use a military translator and say, put this in. This is what you've learned. These are your skills. We can help develop your resume from that. And these are the types of jobs that it's saying that you could qualify for. So you're giving them a start if they have no idea what they want to do. Post resumes on Indeed Military and MonstersMilitary.com. If you call up Indeed, you don't see that there's a military icon, but there's actually a separate website called Indeed Military. And it's for companies that want to go there and just seek out individuals who are veterans or are looking for employment. And the same thing with MonstersMilitary.com. So you sort of post the resumes on there because there are a lot of companies out there who are saying we want to hire veterans and we're looking for them. I gave you a basic understanding of working in the VA benefits. There's a whole lot more out there. The veteran can help you with that. But I gave you the general overview or things to be aware of. It's important for the veteran to know that they're not going to be talking to 15 different people. I share with the veteran that I'm the person that you're going to be speaking with about the Ticket to Work program. I'm not going to transfer you to this person or that person or so forth and so on. They like having the same person. Otherwise, they feel like they're just being tossed around. And ask if the veteran attended a transitional class. I've mentioned our 5-day veteran transition classes. You can go to the local VA and ask them if there's any company that's holding transitional classes. The military themselves, they do have a transitional class. It's very short-term, very light. It doesn't go into these skills or what you can do, and these are the types of jobs that you can do. And it doesn't talk about how to discuss your skills in a way that a civilian HR manager can understand. So it's very important to ask them if they've attended those classes and if there's one that's near to have them go to them. So on the next slide, what I've learned. The veterans do not recognize their skills. There's a lot of skills that are instilled in veterans. To take initiative, to follow through, to work well as a team. They don't recognize those skills because everyone else in the military, they feel, has those skills, and when they come out, they feel like the civilians should have those too. And those are really great skills that, you know, to share with an employer that they don't realize. And veterans, again, can't always define their skills and civilian needs. So it's definitely working with them on that, attending the class. If they cannot attend our class, then I use the military translator, and I help them to see how to discuss what those skills are. Keep your word to nurture trust. We talked about being the only contact person, and I have to tell you, I love working with veterans. Veterans have great follow-through. I rarely have a veteran that I work with who doesn't do what he says that he's going to do in terms of when we're developing our action plan. There is a success story that is on the Choose Work website with a veteran that I worked with, and she's been just really great. But you also have to expect the unexpected with some of our veterans, especially if they have post-traumatic stress disorder. And there's one gentleman that my company helped to become employed, and he went to an insurance company to where he was making calls and scheduling time to talk to the elderly in their homes about insurance and things like that. And things were going well. He went through the training, and he made his first appointment. And when he went to this elderly person's home, because they did home visits to do this, and he knocked on the door, he had a post-traumatic stress disorder event happen. He went into anxiety, had an anxiety attack. This was something that he didn't think about would be an issue. But what he did when he was overseas, when he was on active duty, he used to have to go around and knock on doors and, you know, crash into them to see if anyone was in there. And so that really heightened his sense of reliving that. So we were able to talk to the employer for an accommodation, and so now he's the one that sets the appointments, but he no longer is the person that goes and knocks on the door. So you have to expect the unexpected and just try to, you know, talk to employers, and hopefully they can provide an accommodation. So the last slide is my contact information. I hope I've been of help to all of you. And if you have any questions, just let me know. And thank you.
Thank you, Shireen. As I said, we'll open it up for about 5 minutes to any questions that anyone may have.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, press star followed by the number one on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star one.
Hi, Megan. This is Adele. While you're compiling that, we do have a few questions from the chat, Shireen. One was, how do they qualify if they earn their money through the military, or is this other employment?
How do they qualify? Not quite sure.
Right, that I'm reading it verbatim from the chat, so I'm assuming that how does the veteran qualify if they earn their money? Not certain. Hopefully, maybe whoever asked the question can come on the line and clarify.
Yeah, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. And another question that was asked is, what is the age requirement, if any?
You know, I'm assuming 18,
yes.
You know, as soon as you can go into the service. But there is no specific age requirement that I'm aware of, except for the fact that you go into the service, and if you come out and you have a service-connected disability, then you qualify.
Thank you, Shireen.
And one moment for your first audio question.
So this is Rob. Shireen, I think the question was geared along the lines of how would a veteran collecting VA disability qualify for Social Security disability? And I believe you said that they could qualify whether they're service-connected or non-service-connected. Is that correct?
That is correct. Just in general, though, generally veterans need to have at least a 70% service-connected disability. That's usually enough for what the VA doctors find to usually qualify a veteran for Social Security disability.
Thank you, Shireen. And thank you for the presentation. It was outstanding, and we appreciate your service to our veterans.
Thank you very much.
I believe, operator, there are no calls in the queue for Shireen. Is that correct?
We did have a question come in from Stephen Girk.
Hello.
Hello.
Steve Gerke. I have a gentleman who was in the service like a month, and he's getting like $2,300 a month, he can't get a straight answer about how working affects his disability from the veterans. How can I get that information?
Well, I would think it would be very easy, but I think asking him to see if he can identify if it's a service-connected disability or if it's the non-service-connected disability, because, again, if it's the service-connected disability, then there would be no issues on him returning to work. So if he can identify that either in paperwork or call the VA and ask for a case manager to identify which source he's receiving it from, then that should tell you.
Thinks he's on 100% disability. Like I said, he was in the military for a month, and he, you know, he's getting like $2,300. So
he could be. It depends, you know, if he was injured or had something that happened while he.
It was a mental condition.
Okay. Yes, he would have to get that specifically either from the paperwork he's received from the VA or to call the case manager.
So service or non-service and ask for a case manager?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And Steve, this is Rob. I assume this client of yours is a beneficiary. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's getting Social Security as well.
Okay, you should be able to refer him to your local WIPA.
Okay.
So that information should be available through the ChooseWork website. You should be able to find out who the WIPA is that services your area if you go into ChooseWork.net.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes.
Yep.
So this is Lauren. Robert, I was actually just going to say that our 5 minutes has elapsed, so I was going to go ahead and turn it over to Kara for the next item.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm just going to talk about the A4 a little bit. And for those of you who are newer and don't really know what the A4 is, it's an annual performance outcome report. It's a report that compiles on an annual basis information provided by the EN on the outcomes achieved by the EN with respect to services that you offer to Social Security beneficiaries under our program. So those were sent out to all the ENs who qualified. And as of February 16th, which is today at 10 o'clock this morning, 144 of the 447 required ENs have completed their APOR, so that's only 32.2%. The survey does close on February 28th, so you only have 12 days left to respond. Last year, we did terminate 20 ENs for non-responsiveness. It is in the BPA. ENs are required to provide this information each year on the outcomes. And like I said, failure to complete it in a timely manner will result in Social Security limiting your ability to assign tickets, submit for payments, or you might even have contract termination. However, the following ENs are not required to complete the APOR, so in case you did receive it, if you are a VREN, if you are an American Job Center, or your award date was after 12/31/2015, those entities do not need to complete the APOR this year. If you have any general questions about the APOR, you did not receive your link, please send that inquiry directly to, and we'll put it up on the board, SSAENAPOR@yourtickettowork.com. So please submit your APOR. And I will just jump right into the next category on suitability. So on January 20th, a blast went out to all the ENs entitled Social Security Reminds Employment Networks of Suitability Requirements. And we received some questions about that blast. And the reason the blast went out is we've had several ENs that we've contacted that said they were exempt from suitability. I don't know where that came from, but there's nobody who's exempt. The blast did state that all Ticket to Work employees, including site contacts working with SSA beneficiaries, must have suitability under Part 3, Section 6F of your BPA. I think there was some confusion about the wording. So a site contact are employees who the EN has designated to us as the EN contact person, the EN other person. So these are the people that you say you want us to be in contact with and are working directly with your beneficiaries. So in your BPA, I'll just read a little excerpt. It says, EN employee, all EN employees and subcontractor employees who acquire, handle, or have access to SSA beneficiary PII
in performing duties under the BPA must have suitability. And we're just doing our job. You know, we're not trying to be the bad guy here. It's not just a ticket to work or Social Security requirement. It's actually, it's a Homeland Security presidential directive that we do it. You can get, if you have any questions about how to obtain suitability or you're a little confused, it is on the Your Ticket to Work website. You can also contact enservice@ssa.gov. And then I wanted to jump in a little bit about the staffing, a little bit of the staffing changes we've had here. Our EN service team in particular has lost a couple of employees. There's been retirements, moves, and currently we're working on restructuring and improving communication. There is a new branch chief, Carol Cohen, is now in charge of EN service along with the WIPA and PABS team. So she would be the lead contact, but we prefer you going through EN service or your EN service specialists with any concerns that you may have. And I will hand it over to Terry Uttermullen, who will give you some WIPA updates.
Good afternoon, everybody. I'm actually standing in for Carol. Because she's somewhat more sick than I am. And I just want to talk briefly about the WIPA program and when to refer, when it's appropriate to send people from the employment networks, and a little bit about our training and technical assistance contract. As you know, Work Incentives Planning and Assistance Programs provide in-depth benefits counseling to Social Security beneficiaries who are returning to work. And we have 83 projects across the country, and each of those projects has several benefits counselors we call Community Work Incentives Coordinators. The best time to refer someone to WIPA for services is when they have a job or they're about to take a job. What WIPA does is help people understand how that work will affect their benefits. And we have a lot of people who are out there fortunately seeking services and not as many people providing them as we would like. So we're trying to focus on those people who are at risk for overpayments or who otherwise may be derailed by something that comes across their path. So that's the best time, and you can find out who the Work Incentive Planning and Assistance Project that serves your area is by going to the choosework.ppw.net and the Find Help tool, and they would be happy to help the beneficiaries who are working with you. I and one of my colleagues manage the training and technical assistance contract that helps train the Community Work Incentives Coordinators. This is through Virginia Commonwealth University's National Training and Data Center. And I know that a lot of EN staff through the years have become community partners through the VCU training, where they go through a very rigorous initial training and certification process and are retaining the certification through our continuing certification program, which started this year. I wanted to let you know that those VCU will be having additional initial trainings for work incentives planning and assistance, and we do limit the number of community work incentives coordinators that we allow, community partners that we allow in the class. But you're welcome to enroll. I would strongly suggest that if you're interested in attending the class, that you be very committed to providing full-time benefits counseling to beneficiaries. This is a very limited resource, and it's also a very perishable skill. As I said, this is a very rigorous initial training. It's 5 days, but the 5 days of the training gives you an overview of the various work incentives and programs. It's the beginning of the learning process. There are 7 weeks of testing of various online tests and things you have to provide, and that's for provisional certification. And then you can become fully certified only after submitting benefits analyses, which are written letters that explain the counseling that you've provided to specific beneficiaries. So one of the things that we're rolling out this year is an introductory web course for people who are interested in finding out about WIPA, who want to have a background, a very, very, very basic background in the work incentives. You're at saying, hey, you know what, I kind of want to know what's going on here. And so, VCU will be rolling that out in the next couple of months, actually as early as late March. And they will have registration available from the VCU NTDC website. So it's www.vcu-ntdc.org, and that's the Virginia Commonwealth University National Training and Data Center. This is an online course that will run for six lessons, and the lessons mirror the topics from the intensive training that community work incentive coordinators go to, but it's a very high-level introduction to try to help people become familiar with some of the language. So if you intend to attend an initial training, it's a good background to get started while you're waiting for the training. But if you, let's say you're managing an employment network and you really want to understand what WIPAs do, this is just a good introduction for people to attend. And that is all I have. Kara, I'm going to pass it back to you.
Next would be Patrice McLean with POCs.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Patrice McLean, and I am a project officer with the Office of Beneficiary Outreach and Employment Support. And I'm going to give an update and a small overview of the three proofs of concept that we're working on in OBOS. First, I'll start with the Benefits Planning Query, the BPQY proof of concept. For those who are unfamiliar with that proof of concept, we are centralizing the production of the BPQY for several selected organizations, employment networks, WIPA organizations, and even a prison rehabilitation office. Now, of course, you know the BPQY snapshot of work and entitlement information, and it has information, of course, on use of work incentives by a beneficiary. We've received some feedback that it was difficult to get this document in order to provide employment services to beneficiaries. And so on March 4th, 2015, we implemented this proof of concept to demonstrate that if we centralize this document, we might be able to enhance the efficiency of Social Security providing this information to individuals and organizations. Now, we started with just a few organizations, but we've expanded this project several times to more organizations since its inception on March 4th, 2015. We also hope to expand within the next few months. Right now we have a total of 45 organizations participating. Since we've started, we've been able to produce over 23,000 BPQY to those 45 organizations with an average processing time of 4.1 business days. We provide the BPQY via a number of methods. Participating organizations can either send us requests for BPQY via fax machine, which is a process that we're sort of phasing out right now, but they also can send it via secure email message through our government services online system or a secure partner email system. Once we obtain that document, we conduct a review of the authorization form, and then we return the BPQY electronically to the requester who's authorized to receive that information. Of course, our goals with this proof of concept actually improve efficiency through the centralized process. We'd like to not only produce BPQYs for the organizations that are participating right now, but we do hope that in the long run, as soon as we can demonstrate and obtain the resources that we need, then in the long run, we can begin to produce BPQYs for not just participating organizations, but for everyone across the United States. We also like to create the BPQY as a notice so that it's later on available
for everyone across Social Security lines so that the BPQIs that we provide through this process can be available for field offices should they have the need to pull up that information at any time. We do, again, like I said, hope to expand this proof of concept within the next couple of months and continue to work with our executives to see if we can expand this project incrementally until we have the opportunity to make it a nationwide initiative. Now I'll move forward to another initiative called the Wage Reporting Proof of Concept. We implemented a wage reporting proof of concept on October 31st, 2016. We invited a select number of organizations to participate in an initiative where we send wages that are submitted for payment requests or without a payment request, and we have our ticket program manager enter those wages into a system where they will be accessed by our field offices and payment centers. This initiative was born because sometimes when employment networks send information to our office, it's not readily available for our field offices and payment centers to make adjudicated decisions right away. So we implemented this proof of concept in an effort to reduce overpayments by getting this information that we're already receiving and have make it available so that timely adjudication can be made on behalf of the beneficiaries. The process that we're using right now is where employment networks, and there are 28 that are participating right now, will send payment requests through the ITOP system. If they don't have a payment request, they can still send wages through to the ticket program manager through fax. Once that information is selected, our ticket program manager will identify those wages and associate them with that employment network and enter those wages, be they pay stubs or wage reports, directly into a system that's used in our field offices. A tickle is generated in our field offices that will require action by those field offices within 30 days. Once the field offices have access to this information and the pay stubs or work number reports, et cetera, that have been submitted by the employment network, the field office can then take that information and make a timely adjudication. Again, our goals here are to reduce overpayments. We want to expedite payments to our employment networks, and we want to provide, in the long run, this service to all of our employment networks if possible. The last proof of concept that I'm going to update everyone on is the marketing proof of concept. In April 2016, we announced that we would implement a more secure method of providing beneficiary data to employment networks. At that time, we selected just under 30 organizations and decided that instead of sending marketing beneficiary records on CDs, we would allow employment networks to give us specific information with what they would need in order to market their services to our beneficiaries. Employment networks have been giving us information such as they'd like individuals between the ages of 18 and 64 or individuals who have worked within the last 2 or 3 years and in this geographic locale. And we've limited the employment networks to whether they want either the name and phone number or the name and address of our beneficiary. And we send them the information as per the specifications that they've provided to us. We use government services online to send the beneficiary data records to the employment network, and then they have 30 days to market their services to the beneficiary, and after that time, they have to delete the marketing data file that we sent to them. So far, we've received positive responses from the employment networks that are participating, that they've received callbacks as a result of the marketing services that they conducted through this proof of concept. We've released 23 data files so far, and there are an additional 2 data files that are going to employment networks. And our hope, of course, is to make sure that we can securely send this information and provide our employment networks with the information that they need to market their services. We also want to do so in order to resolve any security or privacy concerns and satisfy FCC requirements in sending this information to employment networks. There are just under 30 organizations participating in this initiative, and we are going to hold a summit with them over the course of the next few weeks so that we can allow them to share their feedback as well as their best practices, and so that we can give them our next step in this proof of concept. That is an update on the three proofs of concept that we are conducting right now, but I did want to open the floor if there were any questions or concerns regarding them.
Patrice, yes. Could you, we have a lot of inquiries about how they get on the waiting list for the BPQI proof of concept. Can you tell them what the box they would inquire into is?
Absolutely. For anyone who's, and I'll do that for all three proofs of concept. Anyone who is interested in becoming a participant in the BPQI proof of concept can send an email to ordes.ordes.bpqy.poc@ssa.gov. And I'll say that one more time. Anyone who's interested in becoming a participant in the BPQI proof of concept can send an email to ordes.bpqy.poc@ssa.gov. Anyone who is interested in participating in the wage reporting proof of concept can send an email to ordes.wagereporting.poc@ssa.gov. Again, anyone who's interested in participating in the wage reporting proof of concept, please send an email to ordes.wagereporting.poc@ssa.gov. And lastly, anyone who is interested in participating in the marketing proof of concept, please send an email to marketing.support@ssa.gov. That's marketing.support@ssa.gov. And at this time, if there, did want to ask if there were any other questions or concerns regarding any of these three proofs of concept.
At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, that's star one. And we do have a question from Freddie Floyd.
Hi. Good afternoon. Yes, I have a. I had a question that went back to the, looking back at my notes, that had something to do with the APOR. My question was, you know, if we have people who are just doing the labor market survey and finding out the qualifications to perform a job, I just wanted to know for ergonomics, we do a lot of ergonomics for employers, especially talking about a veteran. Do we, if the employer wants the veteran or our agency to pay for the ergonomics for that person to do a job, do we get that from SSA, from the SSA department, or do we have to pay for it?
Do you mean a reasonable accommodation for a person with disability?
That's what I meant, yes.
SSA does not pay for that.
SSA will pay for that?
So this is Rob. My question might be, I don't know if it's an, would it classify as an early and then possibly be a work following sentence.
But I'm saying, and she's saying, and correct me, is if the employer is saying, I have a person with a disability and needs a reasonable accommodation, but I want you, Ian, to pay for that reasonable accommodation, and she's asking, would we pay for it?
Right, not under the ticket program, no.
Well, that's like a workstation, for instance. You know, a lot of employers are required to provide reasonable accommodation, but if there's some ergonomics involved where we may have to build like a little small workstation for the person to reach the computer at arm's length, then the company really don't have to pay for it. So if it involves a veteran, would SSA pay for that?
So this is Rob. We think, based on your scenario, that it may fall under an impairment-related work expense, which
right.
is one of our work incentives. But we would probably refer you to our work incentives information, which is contained on our ChooseWork.net website. You can find all the information about our work incentives there, or you can just Google Social Security Work Incentives Red Book. It would be included there as well. If you have any additional, we could also, if you'd like to follow up with us, we could perhaps refer you to somebody, one of our work incentive specialists on staff or on the other side of the component.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Rob, this is Siri, if I could help real quick.
Yeah, sure.
Just to clarify, we don't pay for those kinds of accommodations. That what an impairment-related work expense is a way for a person with a disability who is receiving benefits, who spends money out of pocket to pay for something that they need that's related to their disability, necessary for work, paid out of pocket. They can, Social Security, when they make determinations about the person's disability benefits or their SSI, can use that expense to reduce the impact of the earnings on their benefits.
Okay.
But we don't make out-of-pocket costs. If the person's a veteran, he might want to check with the VA to see if there is a program that would help, but that's outside of our bailiwick.
Okay, because I did, and one of my, I'm going to get back to the marketing too, but also as far as the suitability. Now, I received a message that all staff people at a particular EN agency must go through the suitability. Well, what about if a staff person only do not come into contact with the beneficiary, only thing that they do is conduct a labor market survey, try to get job openings for beneficiaries that we're working with. Are they required to go through suitability, although they're just doing phone contacts with employers?
So this is Rob. The rule of thumb regarding suitability is if you have staff working with a beneficiary and part of that interaction is discussing the beneficiary's PII, and that could PII is very broad. You know, it can be an address, it can be a name, telephone number, et cetera, you know, not just Social Security number. Then that person in your organization should have suitability. In addition to, if you, so there are within that, within those parameters, there are, you know, millions and millions of sub scenarios that different organizations may have. What I would reference, we do have something on our service provider webpage that's a resource as well, under your ticket to work, which is the EN service provider website. If you type in suitability, there is information on that page, more specific information that will help guide you as far as giving you information pertaining to your specific needs of your organization. And then at that point, if you still have questions, please reach out to the EN help desk, and they will work with you to resolve any additional questions you have. I hope that helps.
Oh, yes, that will. And then the marketing, too. That's one of the questions, too. I did not get all of that. There was a little static in my phone that we're going to be working and getting rid of. But as far as our agency marketing and trying to identify beneficiaries, and she gave me, I think it was like, could I get that again, please?
So you were in the initial round of the EN marketing proof of concept, is that correct?
Yes, and we would like to get involved in right.
Okay. So we're going to have, I believe, we've completed our first round of files that we've sent to participating organizations. And Patrice, if you'd like to weigh in on this, I believe we're going to have a call with service providers to go over the first round of files.
Yes.
Do you want to weigh in on it?
Yes, thanks.
Thank you.
Correct. No problem. That is correct, Rob. We've completed the first round of files to all organizations, and in several of our updates that we've sent over the past couple of months, we did say that we were going to at least send the first round of data to all of our organizations and then start to send the second round, which we hope will be a bit more of a quick process.
Okay.
We're going to schedule a summit. The tentative date right now is March 1st.
Okay.
But you'll receive an email invitation and we're asking for feedback and best practices, and we're also at that time going to give information regarding when we can expect to start sending the second round. At this point, we're pretty much ramped up to do so, but we did want to get feedback from all of the participating organizations before we started sending the second round. So okay. I anticipate that shortly after March 1st, we'll be starting with our second round of data.
Okay, sounds great.
Thank you.
I think that's good.
No.
Thank you.
No problem. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Karen.
We're going to go ahead and turn it over at this point to Jamie Pendergraft at TPM.
Hi, Rob. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Jamie Pendergraft, and I am the Program Outreach Manager for the Ticket Program Manager. And I wanted to talk today about a couple of upcoming events and some new resources. And there is a slide on your screen right now that provides a whole bunch of links and some resources and some contact information. So everything I talk about is listed on this slide today. Our main monthly outreach activity are called Work Incentive Seminar Event Webinars, or WISE Webinars. And for those of you who may be newer ENs, these are monthly webinars that are held on the fourth Wednesday of the month, and they provide beneficiaries with information about the Ticket to Work program and other work incentives. Every month, we also try to choose a specific topic to focus on. They vary from veterans to mental health. This month's webinar focuses on choosing the service provider that's right for you. We'll be talking about the different types of ticket program service providers, including employment networks, VR agencies, WIPAs, and TAB programs. And on this slide, I've listed our webinar flyer. And if anyone in the audience would like to share this flyer, please feel free to do so. We're always looking for new participants. And along the same lines, we're also always looking for volunteer presenters. So if anyone would be interested in joining us as a presenter, please email webinars@choosework.net. And I did talk about the February theme. In March, we'll be focusing on the ABLE Act, which is a new subject for us. So we're very excited about that webinar as well and hope you'll all be able to join us and, again, help us spread the word. And if anyone has questions about how you can help us spread information about our webinars, you can also email webinars@choosework.net and we'll get back to you. We are also happy to announce a couple of new resources. Since the last All-EN call, we have published two new success stories, one on a woman named Shalita Gorham and the other on Lori Adler. And they are both available on our success stories site on choosework.net. And Shalita's story actually was just published last week, so it is brand new, and we hope you'll check it out and also share information about those stories as well. We also have a new resource called Frequently Asked Questions for People Who Are Blind. This document details information about different work incentives that are available to people who are blind and receive SSI or SSDI, and it is also a relatively new document. And, again, the link is on the slide. Another resource we were asked to share is actually from the United States Department of Education, and it's called A Transition Guide to Post-Secondary Education and Employment for Students and Youth with Disabilities. And this is a relatively new publication. It came out in January, and it was released by the Office of Special Education and Rehabilitative Services. The guide includes information about education, training programs, and services and supports available during the transition to adulthood and work, and it reviews important things to consider as people decide if they'd like to go to college, seek other post-secondary education and job training, or go straight to the workforce. So this guide has a ton of really helpful information for young adults with disabilities and also provides some tips for service providers who may be working with them. Finally, we're also very happy to announce that we will be doing a service provider's materials distribution starting in March. Ticket service providers will have the opportunity to order a variety of materials. There will be an announcement going out on March 6th, and you will have until April 5th to submit your orders. These orders are on a first-come, first-served basis, and when we release that announcement on March 6th, all of the materials that are included will be listed in the announcement. And I believe that is everything I have to cover today, so I will turn it over for the training update.
Thank you, Jamie. This is Adele with Ticket Program Manager, and I'm here to speak about training. First of all, I would like to thank everyone for joining us today. This is always a great opportunity for all of us to get together and network and help each other out. So this always excites me when we could have this opportunity. And I would also like to thank and express my appreciation for everyone's support throughout our learning management system endeavor. I would like for everyone to know that TPM Training is working diligently with Social Security to build the learning management system curriculum. So please keep an eye out for updates on that. And all of your work, your feedback, has helped us make this endeavor just phenomenal, as this is proof right now using the Collaborate for Blackboard. I think it was a seamless transition, and we've all worked together to make this an outstanding project. The other piece I have for you is effective practices. On our website at yourtickettowork.com, when you go there, if you click on Information Center, and then at the left, under Training, there's effective practices. And we've just recently posted an exciting document for you. It's moving ticket holders towards financial independence using financial capability strategies. So this is our effort to help you to become more successful in working with your beneficiaries. With this particular training, you can learn about sound financial capability strategies, connection between employment outcomes and financial stability, and there's also going to be valuable sources for training, technical assistance, and support services. So thank you, everyone, again for your time. Again, this was Adele from the Training Management, and I'll go ahead and hand it over to Katie for some updates.
Hello. Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to give you a couple of systems updates. The first is ePay. We started processing the latest quarterly ePay file this past Thursday, January the 26th. The current file contains over 16,000 SSNs. You can always check the announcement screen in the ticket portal for a status on the current ePay file. So as soon as we complete this file, there will be an announcement letting you know that the file is complete. Just a reminder, the ePay file is not an automated process. A file containing possible payment leads based on the current earnings of your eligible beneficiaries is evaluated one at a time by our payment staff. We recently sent a GUP delivery out on February 2nd about expired CCR/SAM registrations. Every EN is required to have an active CCR registration. We cannot make payments to your EN if your registration has expired. As a result, your beneficiaries will not be included on the ePay file if we started the ePay file and you are expired. Please refer to the GUP delivery message for further information. Ticket assignments. We are continuing to investigate an issue in the ticket portal that is allowing ticket assignments when a beneficiary is not in current pay. At this time, this problem seems to be isolated to VRs and not ENs. Our current research does not indicate that this issue should affect anyone on this call, but we wanted to make you aware of this issue. We currently have a QA process in place to verify the validity of a ticket assignment before we make the first ticket payment, but I wanted to make you aware, in case you heard about this issue, that we are currently researching the issue, and we do not believe it should be affecting you. And from there, I'll open up to questions.
And again, to ask a question, that's star one. And we do have a question from Susan Webb.
Hello, everyone. Happy New Year.
Hi, Susan.
Hi, Rob. Hey, my question is, I think it was at the last All-EN call, that you mentioned someone new on staff that came from field operations. And I'm just wondering what he has been doing, what he plans to do, because getting field office cooperation is still a problem. This morning we sent a consumer over to the field office to get their benefits query, and the person at the field office told her she's not allowed to have it, and she's going to file a complaint against that employment network for giving them more work to do.
So, Susan, thanks for the question. The person you're referencing is, I believe, Hai Hinojosa, who is the Assistant Regional Commissioner in the San Francisco region. and he has agreed to serve as our operations lead executive for the Ticket to Work program and all things Better Ticket issues. What I would suggest is go ahead and forward me your scenario. What we do with operations, any kind of operations issue we have, is internally we try to work through our operations contacts that we have organizationally to resolve those issues at the lowest level possible before elevating those. We're aware in general that there are likely disconnects in different parts of the country. Our operations component is, is strapped resource-wise. So we hear from time to time things like this will come up. But again, if you forward me that, I will reach out to our contacts and operations to see if we can get some resolution.
Okay, just let me make one other comment then. There was a notice that went out some time back to the field offices. I don't know who sent it or what, but it was explaining to them a little bit more about employment networks and what we do, and it just seems like, okay, it may be time to do that again because of this incident that I just told you about is not isolated, and it's become a real problem, and we just feel like, what are we going to do? So I will email you as you requested. But I just think it's still a systemic problem, and I thought that when you brought that gentleman into the fray that he would be really focusing on this issue.
Yeah, Hi is a great resource for us. And going back a step in terms of the efforts to communicate to the field about the program, we did engage in a video on demand training with the Area Work Incentive Coordinators in the Dallas region about a year and a half ago, where we developed a training tool for the field components, for the field offices, along with a companion two-part video to sort of walk them through at a high level what the Ticket to Work program was, who the service providers were, and so forth. And the tool that we gave them was essentially a decision tree when they would have a beneficiary who was interested in returning to work sitting in front of them at the field office. So that did go out about a year ago or so. Again, this is a continuing effort, we realize, to constantly promote awareness of Ticket to Work as staff turnover in the field offices and so forth. It's an ongoing effort. I appreciate you raising that with me. And the suggestion of maybe sending out a reminder, and perhaps something along the lines of administrative messages is, I think, a good idea. So we'll look into that as well.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate it. Good talking to you.
Yep, thanks.
And your next question comes from one of Lauren Womack.
Hello.
Hi.
I was interested in the classes that y'all were talking about earlier for the benefits planning that were offered through the two universities. Is there any way you could send out an email or a post somewhere where you can get the links to those classes? Is it just going to be something you can do on your own, or is it going to be offered at a particular time?
Terry, do you want to take that one?
Not sure if Terry's still on the line. We do have information available that we can forward relative to. I believe our training materials are on the internet for the Virginia Commonwealth.
Right. This is Adele, Rob. We'll go ahead, Lauren. I'll go ahead and send out something to you so we can follow up with you. Okay. This is Adele from training, and I'll be sure to follow up with you next week on Tuesday if that's okay.
Okay. Do you need my email? Do you want me to put my email address in the chat box?
You have Lauren Womack? Yes, please go ahead and put it in the chat box, and I'll go ahead and send that out to you.
I'm sorry to disturb everybody.
No, thank you. That's what we're here for. This is what this is all about.
And your next question comes from one of Tripp Carter.
Hey, everybody. I just wanted to know if there were any updates on TPR or the 2016 EN report cards.
I'll let Chara handle that, Trip. Thanks for the call.
Hi, Trip. Thanks. Right now, timely progress is on hold. We're working on things in our system first, so there is still a moratorium on that right now. As far as the report cards go, I thought a blast went out last week sometime. Felix, are you on? Wasn't there a blast last week about that?
I am on. This is Felix. I don't remember the blast last week.
Okay, I could be wrong. It could be another subject. I honestly don't know about the report card trip, but we will look into that for you.
Okay. We were just curious, but thank you.
Thank you, Trip. We'll circle back.
All right. Not a problem.
Again, to ask a question, that's star one. And your next question comes from Paul Luttrell.
Hello, Rob, and everybody else. It's been an interesting call. What I was calling about is the EN directory on the Choose Work website. As you all know, or I think you probably all know, there are a lot of issues associated with that, with the directory showing multiple listings of the same employment networks many times, and the big concern there is with beneficiaries, because if they go to a website and to the directory on the Choose Work website looking for an employment network and they see multiple listings for the same employment network, this is frustrating and confusing, and I'm sure many of them get discouraged about trying to contact an employment network with that situation. So, and I know you've been working on it, and I was just calling to see where that stands in terms of getting the EN directory better organized and more user friendly, especially for beneficiaries. That's it.
Thanks, Paul. I appreciate your call. I appreciate the fact that you raised the subject. That is one of our behind the scenes things that we have going on internally. We have a lot of spinning plates. We're aware of the issue with the Find Help tool. We are addressing this right now. We're going to make this tool better, and we anticipate having a better version in place within the next, I would hopefully, and Felix can chime in on this, but I'm hoping by summertime that we'll have this corrected.
Yeah, this is Felix. I think that should be, that fits within the timeline, I think, what we're working on. And I'll echo, Rob, your sentiment. Thank you, Paul, for bringing that up. And we do recognize that it's a priority. We've got some ideas about how to correct that we've worked with our Social Security colleagues. And we are doing the work behind the scenes that we need in order to implement those. And I think the summer time frame is pretty reasonable.
Yeah. And I want to acknowledge your retirement and wish you all the best.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right.
I think we have time for one more question, Rob, if you want to go ahead and
take
one more.
We'll take one more, operator.
Okay, next. Star one to ask a question. And there are no further questions at this time.
Well, thanks to everybody who participated. I want to welcome Jamie on board. I welcome to the team, Jamie Pendergraf. Also, Carol Dempsey is a new addition for us internally. Thanks to Katie Schreibinger for her fast typing and dual duties today, and everybody here, Adele and the folks at TPM and Kara and our team, Terry and everyone else, Patrice. Thanks to all, and to our EN partners out there. Thanks for all that you do with providing quality service to our beneficiaries. We greatly appreciate it, and thanks for calling in today.
Our next call will be May 18th, so thank you, everybody, for joining us. Have a great rest of the day.
And that does conclude today's call. You may now disconnect your lines.